right. Let's go down to L.A. and bring in Henry Schulman, Hank Schulman of the San Francisco Chronicle. Henry, how are you on this Sunday?
I'm doing well. Very nice morning here.
Yeah, it sounds the weather sounded really nice last night as well. It sounds like it's good baseball weather, right?
Yeah. It's fall like. It's a little warm in the afternoon. It cooled off in the evening. It's just perfect. Which you rarely get down here. So it was nice.
You know, of course your articles are always terrific, but this one really hit home with me this morning because. It's Giants-Dodgers. It's Saturday night. It's L.A. I always say something unusual happens, and certainly the end of the game was unusual, and an eighth inning where the Giants had the bases loaded and couldn't score was somewhat unusual. But the Giant-Dodger thing, the Dodgers have clinched, but I don't think anyone told the Giants yet.
Well, I mean, look, Bochy is trying to push a message in the clubhouse, and it's not let's not lose 100 games because that's pushing a negative out there. And they're still out there trying to win ball games. They're still out there trying to win series. And as I pointed out in the story, everybody's playing for something just about right now. And you can't tell Ortiz Hernandez this was a meaningless game because he goes out there and gets three hits and a walk. And that's one more notch in his belt when the Brass has to go into the offseason and decide what they're going to do about the outfield next year. Is he going to be a starting outfielder? No, that's not what Ortiz Hernandez is. But maybe they decide they can save some money by not having to go out and get a fourth or fifth outfielder because of the way he's played basically, since May. It was an important game for Bumgarner, too. He said it. He loses sleep every time the Giants lose, whether he pitches well or not. And for the team, too, to see Bumgarner go out there and dominate. And granted, Bellinger wasn't playing and Turner wasn't playing and Grandal wasn't playing. But, he was facing Kike Hernandez, who's hitting like .500 off him. Chris Taylor, who's been like one of the surprise players. Corey Seager is in there. I mean, these are all dangerous, these are dangerous guys. And for the team to see him just sort of dominate those guys the way he did can also have a positive impact.
Henry, what about the end of the game with Puig trying to steal second base? There's great moments of baseball history where Babe Ruth tried to do it in the seventh game of a World Series and was thrown out at second base to end it. But I'm not saying Puig is Babe Ruth, but where the heck was he going and why did he pull up and what did you learn about it?
Well, that's one of those things where if you're going to go, you better make it. And actually, he got a great jump. Bochy thought Posey didn't have a chance. Dyson was a little slow to the plate on that pitch. And he pulled up and, he sort of started grabbing at his ankle as if he had hurt his ankle as he was running. And he said that's why he didn't slide. And Dave Roberts didn't buy any of it. I mean, Roberts lit into him after the game. I wasn't in there to hear it, but I saw the transcript and all that. And Robert said that you cannot take off in that situation and not slide. And I don't think he cared if the ankle was broken or not. It's just another thing where Roberts has had to ride herd on this guy for a couple of years now. A real tough love situation that seems to have paid off. Puig has been an excellent contributor to this team this year. You don't see him overthrow cutoff man that much. You don't see him make stupid plays out there. He's finally listening. I think it took that trip to the minors last year to do it. And I think that Roberts last night must have felt he needs to continue to, to call him out a little bit, embarrass him a little bit for something like that. Especially, Chase Utley is not having a great season by any means. But every time we see him, he destroys the Giants. So, it was easy to imagine. Utley coming up there against Dyson, as good as Dyson has been, getting a hit. And, Puig gets into scoring position. And, now maybe they can put Grandal up there and, maybe have a chance to tie the game. And Utley never got to swing the bat.
Well, it's Saturday night in L.A. Something always happens down there. Henry, I said this morning, Melanson and Dyson. I said, I don't care what Melanson does over the winter, what he does in spring training. I would come out and have Dyson as my closer. And have Melanson as the eighth inning guy. That's how impressed I am with Dyson. Any validity to that?
Yeah, I think so. I think that as Brian Sabian likes to say, the National League West is like a shotgun start, and you can see the value of coming out really strongly to start the season the way Arizona did. I mean, Arizona, and they took a bunch of games from the Giants right off the bat, and it sort of propelled them. So those games are important too, but, you know, I guess it's just a reality in baseball. When you pay a guy $62 million to be the closer, he's going to be the closer. And, you know, I mean, it's a little early to talk about 2018 and short leashes and things like that. And you don't know, because Dyson might come into camp and who knows, he might be throwing the way he did when he was with the Rangers, which is why they got rid of him for nothing. So, you know, you let it play out. But no, I think your point is absolutely valid. I think that, you know, if the decisions were not dictated by money, I would think that, you know, I mean, I think Dyson would come out and be the closer.
Yeah, I think he's been that good, and he keeps the ball down, and the ball moves, and nothing seems to bother this guy at all. He just stands out there and gets his job done. Henry Schulman with us of the Chronicle. Henry, I'll give you two names, and you tell me who's most likely to be a Giant in 2018. Hunter Strickland, Joe Panik.
Oh, I would say Joe Panik. I mean, I think that, you know, there's a lot of talk about Panik right now being traded, but that's only because, you know, he's the most quote-unquote tradable among the guys who are on the field every day. But, I mean, I think they're not going to lightly move him. I mean, you know, you saw last night the way he works with Crawford. I mean, some of the defense that he's played out there. And, you know, he's still got a pretty good bat. He's still a fairly cheap cheap contract, which, you know, is one of the reasons, another reason why you consider him as trade bait. And I mean, I frankly think both of those guys will be back. I don't think that there's any push to move Strickland, but I would say probably, you know, I would probably say a Panik trade is unlikely.
All right. Yeah, I thought Strickland is the more likely one to go, but it wouldn't shock me if they both went in a deal. But I'll tell you another thing, and Andy wrote about this yesterday, and I'm sure it's been talked about. We did as well. Sandoval, and he had the big home run off Jansen. He's had a very good week. Bochy has commended him a little bit. You think Sandoval is sort of a lock to get that invitation to spring training and come back?
Oh, I think he's a lock to get an invitation to spring training and come back. I mean, there's no reason not to for $500,000. But I think the most fascinating decision that the front office has to make this winter is not which outfielder to get. They're going to have to get outfielders. We know that. I think the more fascinating decision is what they do about third base. I mean, do they go out and spend a lot of money or spend a lot of prospects in a trade to get a guy who's more established than Sandoval is now to play that position? Or do they just take their chances with Sandoval based on what they've seen here in the last couple of weeks of the season with Christian Arroyo is sort of in the picture as well, and see what they get? And I have not heard either way, and I actually think this is something that they're going to probably wrestle with depending on what the third baseman is going to cost. You hear Moustakas' name mentioned a lot. He's a great player, but he's another left-handed hitter, which they don't need. And, you know, I mean, it's possible that they may decide to spend their money elsewhere and take their chances with Sandoval and Arroyo. And, you know, it's always a bit of a risk, but the way Sandoval's hitting right now, I mean, he's looked better right now in the last week or two than he has at any time that he was with the Boston Red Sox.
No, I agree. And I think he's different at the plate. He's not jumping as much. And I think I thought before they went on the road trip, when they were home against Colorado, I thought he actually looked a lot better than I've seen him. So I agree with you. I think there's no reason not to, unless you brought in a Todd Frazier or someone who legitimately could just play third base. And well, then it depends what you do with Panik and Arroyo and everything else. But we'll see. That's part of the winter. You had some good comments from Samardzija. You wrote about that this morning as well. Samardzija, I think 200 innings, 200 strikeouts, maybe the best pitcher on the staff this year, of course, with the injuries factored in. But he did everything they asked of him this year.
Yeah, you know, I mean, one of the problems, though, is you know, I mean, the ERA did jump 0.7 of a point, and some of that is the defense behind him. I mean, that you can't mistake that. And some of it is just, you know, he's always going to give up home runs. That was kind of the point of the story. For those who didn't read it, I mean, one of the points I made was he has 29 homers allowed this year. That's his career high. He tied his career high. Now, 2 years ago when he gave up 29 home runs, there were only five guys in the majors who gave up more. This year he's like 16th in how many home runs he's given up because there's so much power out there. So, you know, in a way, in an odd way, this 29 isn't as bad as the other 29. But, yeah, I mean, you know, he got a whole lot better this year with cutting down on walks, and he actually leads the National League in, with the best strikeout-to-walk ratio. And one of the things about next year is perhaps he can be a little smarter in certain situations about not giving in to hitters in situations where they can beat him with a home run when he doesn't have to. But on the other hand, he's an aggressive pitcher,
yeah.
And a tiger can't change its stripes. I think the key is, you know, he's given up 29 home runs. 17 of those are solos. If he gives up 30 home runs next year, but 23 of them are solos, and he doesn't give up 6 3-run homers, I think that would help a lot. But a guy like him who throws a lot of fastballs, who's always going to be around the plate, is going to be a little more prone to the home run. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, look, the great Bert Blyleven, Hall of Famers, Robin Roberts, so many of them gave up the solo shots. Catfish Hunter was another one. And for Samardzija, he is around the plate. And I know when he first got here, they talked about Don Cooper, the White Sox, the pitching coach, and now that he's a Giant, they're going to turn around the ratios and more splits, more changeups, and more curves, and not that fastball. But you're right. This is who he is. But he really did come through for the Giants, so I thought it was a good year for him. One more thought for you, Henry. The Dodgers, to me, and again, just watching them, they look vulnerable again to lefties. And they may end up with Arizona in that first game. Who knows what's going to happen. But they're starting to look to me again offensively like lefties can shut them down a little bit.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that, you know, it'll be an interesting first game if the Diamondbacks end up winning that wild card game because, you know, Greinke is going to pitch the wild card game. And so Robbie Ray would pitch the opener against Clayton Kershaw. And to me, that is must-see television. And I was thinking about the same thought. Okay, who would pitch game three then? I mean, Greinke would, I believe Greinke would have to come back for, I'm sorry, who would pitch game two?
Right.
Greinke wouldn't be able to come back for game two. And they'd have an interesting call there. Patrick Corbin actually has really redeemed himself this year. Patrick Corbin, who's been sort of, he's been an ace-like quantity for the Diamondbacks, at least in theory, but he hadn't really brought it together. And this year, he's a little bit of a different pitcher, and I wonder if the Diamondbacks, even though they have Godley, who the Giants are going to see tomorrow, who's been very good, Taijuan Walker, also very good up until the last couple of starts, I think they'd have to throw Patrick Corbin out there in game two just for the very, very reason that you said, you know, to try and neutralize guys like Seager and Bellinger. Try and sneak a win there against Yu Darvish.
And you turn Grandal around. Grandal is a whole different player.
Exactly.
From the right side.
Exactly.
As well. Yeah, it could be interesting. This is going to be interesting. Henry, Bruce and I just talked about it and the Bruce Maxwell situation yesterday and his speaking out and kneeling down and explaining very articulately his feelings about what's going on in the world and not to disparage the country or the flag or anything, but just to bring to light his feelings about what's going on and the things that have been said. Is there any talk in the Giants clubhouse about that around San Francisco about this ball club?
No, I haven't heard anything about it. I mean, the whole issue of baseball players doing it really just arose yesterday.
Right.
I know one thing now. I usually try and stay in the lunchroom during the national anthem because I've heard it 8 million times. And I'm not a big fan of playing the national anthem before ball games anyway, but now as a reporter, I got to stand outside or sit outside and look to see what's going on. And, you know, the Giants do not, let's face it, the Giants have, one African-American player,
right.
Denard Span. And I don't know that, I mean, I've never talked to him about it. So I don't know if he would make a protest like that. I think the Giants do have a lot of conservatives on their team. There was one player last night who, I'm not going to mention his name, but, he sort of made a somewhat of a disparaging comment about Maxwell, doing what he did. Guys are entitled to their opinions. And I think it would be an interesting question for Bochy this morning when we talked to him at 11:30 as to whether he's had any conversations with any of the players about – about anything like that, because I think when Maxwell did it, I'm sure it was not a surprise. I'm sure as a rookie, he told his manager and coaches and whatnot what he was planning to do, and they stood behind him.
Yes, he did. He's African-American from Alabama. His father's in the military, and he made it very, very clear what his feelings were, that he was going to speak up for people who couldn't, and for the divisiveness that we're seeing right now, that he wanted to make it known in a public place at a time when people do reflect upon what's going on, and the national anthem is played at a time when you think about it, and it's not disrespectful to anybody, but it's your way of exercising your First Amendment right. And as long as your employer is okay with it, why not? And if the employer isn't, then you have an issue.
I don't know if you have 30 seconds here, but I said this on my Facebook last night. I mean, the Star Spangled Banner to me is just a rote recitation of a poem that really covers one battle in one war that really doesn't say anything about America. I would love to see the Star Spangled Banner replaced. Take 2 minutes before every ball game. Mix it up. Sing America the Beautiful one day. Have a kid come out and read a poem about what America means to him. Have some military person stand out there for a minute and a half and tell the crowd why he loves America and why he fought for our freedom and things like that. That would have some meaning to me, rather than standing up there and, you know, every day, day after day after day, singing a song that nobody really listens to the words anymore, like the whole Pledge of Allegiance nonsense in school. I would love to see that. I mean, I think that would be more patriotic and more meaningful than this song that we all have to stand up for that creates all this division.
Yeah, I agree. So we'll see, but it's good to talk about. I'll be interested to see how the Giants respond to it, since it isn't baseball now. It is in our world, the sports world in baseball. So I'd be interested to see what they say. And, of course, as you know, I've explained, the national anthem was adopted in 1931 and was played every day since 1942. And as Bruce Jenkins said, because of World War II and what that meant and the unification of everyone behind that effort. And now it's more of a symbol. And if you say something during the national anthem, then you're against it, which is not true. It is a chance just to speak your mind. That's what the song stands for, that gave you the right to say what's on your mind. So that's my thought about it. But I know a lot of people have thoughts about it, but I'm glad to get yours. Henry, thank you. As always, it's a pleasure, and look forward to seeing you next year. And Lashana Tova to you.
Okay, happy holidays to you, too.
All right, thanks. That's Henry Shulman of The Chronicle. Always a pleasure having him on.